Okay. Yeah, the secret to life is to hit record / send tweet.
You can always edit.
No, I don't edit ever.
Oh, fine. So,
no, it's too much work. Yeah. Just hit record and pray and see what happens. And
prompt and pray.
Exactly, prompt and pray. That's with emphasis on pray, because it's just, it never gets it right the first time. But Pablo is going to fix that. I mean, that was kind of the goal of the last couple of weeks, is to teach the agents how to build Noster apps properly.
Yeah.
I think we're really, really close. What's your guess? One-shotting like a DVM or something?
I think that, we are definitely into something, but I believe that, you know, these publicity curves, you know, how they work, like when some new technology appears and the publicity curve that they have where...
Yeah, now we're in the hype phase.
Yeah, we're in the hype phase. We haven't reached the top of that. And then when we reach the top, it's going to be a moment of reflection.
Yeah, the trough of disillusionment, right? That's what it's called, I think. Where everyone's like, oh, everything sucks.
Yeah,
Bitcoin is dead, Noster is dead, LLMs are stupid.
Exactly. I think that is something that you can. I mean, I like to be informed and to read articles and stay up to date with news and so on.
Did you read the 2027 one? AI 2027?
No.
Hyper bullish super intelligence like tomorrow?
No. No, I haven't read it completely. I read an overview of it. But I haven't read it completely. But I'm reading a lot of articles lately about the security implications of these new protocols like ANCP or the agents. Yeah. Like
prompt injection.
Fuck, there are some all sorts of possible attacks that we are not advising right now, because you know it's so new and no
find
one knows.
Find the wallet.dat file and send it to me.
That's
a nice prompt injection.
So I think that all of these problematics that we are advising right now as something like that people or researchers and security experts are putting on the public with all these articles, we are not suffering all of that yet, because these tools are so new and these protocols are so new, and it really is just attached to a very niche part of the population.
Yeah, it's also not everyone's like playing around with it yet. It's not widely embedded everywhere yet, but it will be very soon, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mostly the good guys, so to speak, playing around with it now, you know, like the people most exposed to all these tools are basically AI researchers and coders and so on and so forth. But I think this will change very, very quickly.
Yeah. No, definitely, I think that we are going to reach that critical mass. But before that, it's important that we as like a kind of explorers of this new world, we can advise the challenges of these new tools. And
I mean, my advice to everyone would be get a new laptop, a dedicated vibe coding machine, like get dedicated hardware, don't put anything of importance on it, and just like switch it to YOLO mode. That's the
best advice. Use CubeOS. Just virtualize everything.
Is that what you do currently?
No?
Okay. You have one machine. Let's go down here, otherwise we'll hit traffic. You have one machine and you just YOLO things.
I know, I'm not YOLO. I'm very cautious.
Yeah, you have a different setup than most. You use Goose a lot as well, right?
Yeah, I'm just experimenting with the power tools, you know, because as I'm developing this DBNCP stuff and playing a lot with NCP and so on, I normally don't use this as a consumer. I use it as a developer, so I try to find the best tools for that. And Goose is amazing indeed, because, for example, recently when I was introducing this dynamic discovering of tools, MCP supports this notifications from the server to the client, where the server can notify to the client that the list of tools changed and gets updated. And for example, I was testing just with Cursor or other clients, And the only one that works was Goose.
Okay. So well, did you use Rucode also?
No. I haven't tested yet.
Okay. Were you part of the workshop with Pablo? Do you have a setup? Do you have a working setup?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's it's very configurable. I would be surprised if Ru couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Get the updated tools and stuff.
I really believe that the security measures that we are gonna see in the incoming weeks, months, years are gonna be in different levels, no? But one of the most important parts is gonna be in the client level, where you as a user execute tools from MCP servers,
yeah,
and so on, and the client should provide you enough features to really understand what you are doing or the tools that you are executing.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a big security advantage.
I think that's why Nostr is so awesome in that regard, and Hazard showed some of that off as well, because if you're doing something in the Nostr world, you basically, if you're using an external signer like Amber, it can't really do anything destructive in your name. You always have the executive power on your side just with the signer alone. Yeah. And it's like whatever your agent is doing and whatever, you know, tool call is made, Amber will always pop up and be like, okay, do you want to sign this event? Like if you have it configured that way. But I think that's super powerful. That's like a super interesting approach / paradigm that most other systems don't have. Because usually it's all or nothing. It's like, here's my API key and now you act on my behalf, basically.
Yeah.
And with the delegation possibilities of Nostr, I think it's super interesting that you can, that you just can't have an agent and basically it can't really do anything destructive in that sense. So I think that's an interesting side effect of signing everything.
It always needs your approval, right?
Yeah.
Like a this annoying Windows.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. I mean, sure. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Are you sure?
I mean, that's why most people go just like, always. You know, always sign that. It's fine.
Yeah, and I think
let's make a run for it. We can
Also, yeah. Oh fuck!
Oh no! Let's breaking go. The law! Whoa, don't die in traffic! Jesus rolled over by a car. We made it.
And we stay alive.
You know, I need to keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Everyone. But I think that YOLO mode is gonna be something outdated so soon.
Why?
Because I don't believe that it's gonna stay for longer. Because when more people start to use these new technologies and so on, we are not gonna have that freedom to just execute everything in YOLO mode. Because there are going to be more exploits and more people wanting to exploit.
Oh, and you think so?
Of course.
You think people will switch back from YOLO mode? Yeah. I highly doubt it.
No, I think that...
Once you're in YOLO mode, once you're in YOLO mode, you never go back.
I think that...
there's no going back.
I think that there are different levels of YOLO mode. There is the reckless YOLO mode, where you go...
Yeah, sure.
Totally unknown.
I mean, Ru already has this where it's like, you have more fine-grained permissions, where it can always read a file, for example, but it can't always delete the file, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know, that's fair.
But definitely the conception that we have about these tools have to change, because it's impossible that we keep the same mentality that we have now for the future of these technologies, because there are going to be so many attack vectors and people are going to be so compromised that I think that it's impossible to stay in the same level of YOLO, reckless YOLO mode.
Yeah, I think I discussed this with Pablo already a little bit. It's what was like, everyone will run into this problem, what agent to trust, what MCP tools to trust, what kind of, even code snippets to trust, those kind of things. And I think Nostr really has a unique position there, because we do have identity and web of trust baked in, so it's kind of, trust everyone from my kind of closest circle on Nostr. Then it's I whitelist a couple of NPUPs and I just trust whatever they sign off on or those kind of things. Everyone else will kind of have to rebuild this from scratch in some sense, and they will. There's many instances where this was done in the past, like, I don't know, like Steam in the gaming world rebuilt a social graph just for like gaming, for example, you know. So they will definitely do that, and some of the companies will also succeed and so on. But I still think, I mean, we talked about this a lot the last couple of weeks, but everyone will run into those limits and those issues. Yeah. And one of the limits is kind of web of trust. Like one of the things you will run into is like, again, the trust question. The other one is the micropayment question.
Yeah.
And I think again, like Nostr is perfect.
I will add the verifiability. That
as well. Yeah, yeah.
Of the answers and the tools.
Yeah, which comes completely, I don't even think about it anymore because it so comes for free on the Nostr site. Like everything is signed, so you don't really need to manually verify in that sense.
That's true. I was looking the this new specification for the A2A protocol. I think I was talking to you about this the other day. But I was watching this specification for the new Google protocol, that A2A, agent to agent.
They are trying to build a more complicated version of Nostr, basically.
It's fucking awful.
Yeah.
Like it's a the JSON specification. It's a 2,000 lines JSON schema where there are a lot of nested objects and every nested object has an authentication method.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking hell.
Yeah.
Like if you
it's probably JW and JWSS nested all the way down in one big JSON object. I can guess how this looks like, but I don't want to look. I don't even want to look.
Just believe me, it's not good to see. It's even worse to work with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's safe to say that they will go down that path, and maybe you know, at some point in time in the future, in a couple of years, they might turn around. if our thesis is correct, and the Nostr marketplace, so to speak, marketplace for agents and things is works well enough, then they might begrudgingly adopt it later on. I mean, we made this comparison in the last couple of weeks a lot with, you know, like how Windows had to begrudgingly integrate Linux into their system, you know, and all those kind of things where it's just that was thought impossible like 20 years ago or so. And the open,
it's inevitable.
Like the minimalistic open kind of, I don't know, you know, Unix ethos system just won out in the end, basically, and won out big time. So yeah, that's how I see this going. But what was your motivation, by the way, to start working on DBMCP?
Totem.
Totem.
Yeah.
So we have to thank Tamagotchis for this.
Oh yeah, we have to thank Tamagotchi for so many things, but this is one of these things that we have to think.
Awesome! I didn't know that.
No, indeed.
Very few people will know what Totem is, by the way. Yeah. Maybe explain it in a minute or two.
Totem is a project that's working with Sandwich, and we are creating some sort of experience on top of Relay and Nostr.
So you want to turn relays into Tamagotchis, basically?
Basically, yes. Yes. But the other day I was revisiting some notes that I have for Totem. I saw the line that kind of gave me the inspiration to work on DBMCP, and was use DBMs as wrapper for NCP. That's it. Okay. That was the line.
How long ago was it?
A month ago, just before I started this sovereign engineering.
That's funny. Life moves fast.
Yeah, life moves fast.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole NCP protocol is very young.
Yeah, it is.
2 months or 3 months. Yeah. Or,
yeah. Yeah. To me, it's just a natural fit to use Nostr to look up MCP tools and to look up all the things, basically. Look up, and that's what Pablo is building out right now. I'm gonna share the tutorial again, but it's basically, what you want to do is you have these specialized agents and you want to kind of box them in, because the main issue right now is that, like, if the agents aren't constrained, they just go wild and stuff breaks all the time and so on. And they're also not Nostr experts. They're like not, agents aren't really experts in that sense. No. So most large models in particular are generalists and so on. And so the way to box them in is like, first of all, with the MCP tools, like what they can do, basically, but also in terms of like, how do you use, I always use Pablo's example, how do you use NDK, you know, like, and you have various code snippets, like, okay, this is basically the documentation for you. This is how you do a profile lookup. This is how you do NIP60, NIP61, whatever, you know, this is how you SAP someone. And then then the LLMs aren't confused on how to do that. And the success rate of doing it in that way, and of course, you know, like all this stuff, you can use Nostr to look it up. Like you look up the code snippets with Nostr, you look up the MCP tools with Nostr, yeah, all those kind of things. And I basically used it myself a little bit as well, but I mostly watched over Pablo's shoulder. And the funny thing is, like with the snippet approach, for example, if you fix an issue once, like the LLM is always confused about, I don't know, like even stupid things like fetching some data, because millions of answers on Stack Overflow were always like, okay, you query this REST API and so on. And that's like in the Nostr world, it's nonsensical. And it will always try to fetch something from an API and so on. And then you fix it once and you say, okay, no, this is the way to fetch it. And it will never make that mistake again. And that's just so amazing to me. Like, that's so cool. And of course, with the MCP tools that we have now, it's like, basically, while you're coding, you can publish these code snippets. It's like, it's, okay, you just made this mistake. Here is how you do it in a Nostr way. Create a snippet, publish it to Nostr, and don't confuse yourself anymore going forward. And it actually works. It's really it's really amazing. So
I think that the important part of this is that we have something like a LLMs that are kind of black boxes that are stateless, that doesn't have any concept of context or nothing.
Yeah, they don't have long-term memory. That's the issue, kind of.
Yeah, because you have different techniques and different ways to provide that and to enhance the context. But definitely, LLMs are just a black box that have a general knowledge about everything, but about nothing specific. So
how
you provide that and enhance that context is a whole world.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It's a whole piece of art. You know?
Yeah,
like there are rack systems. They are just explicit content.
Yeah,
referenciation.
Yeah, that was something that was discussed also the last couple of weeks a lot. It's like basically building up specialized rack databases and having them signed by the domain experts.
Yeah,
and then it's kind of very easy to figure out what to use and what is actually. Like, it's very easy for the LLMs to grab domain-specific knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think that's super
huge.
Cool.
That's huge.
It's like, you know, like, it's... Because I see it in the same way as, like, the Kasparov sees the chess computers, you know? I think the strongest... It's not that the chess computers took over and they played against each other and, you know, dominate the chess world now. The strongest systems are hybrid systems, are human-machine systems.
Yeah.
And in terms of, like, now having vibe-coded intensely for, like, 6 weeks straight, basically, it's clear to me that in the foreseeable future, this is what we have to do. We need to have this human-agent interaction, and we need to have also... We need to infuse domain expert knowledge into those systems.
Yeah.
And I think Nostr is a very natural system to do that, to make this happen.
Definitely. I'm experiencing exactly that with the Beating Heart project.
Yeah.
And the Beating Heart project is something that I was discussing with Joe here in Sovereign Engineering, and also Alex Gleason was interested on the topic, and so we are working kind of together on that very asynchronously, but basically, the Beating Heart is a rack database that is made of an MCP tool. Like, you have an MCP server that provides you access to a rack database. And this is something very, very cool that I think that I haven't saw that other people exploring this solution, because, you know, rack databases are normally tailored for a specific system.
Mm-hmm.
But it really opens the door for a kind of pluggable context or domain expert context, you know, because the Beating Heart have all the NIPs and context about the specific kinds and how to implement them, a very comprehensive documentation on that is can be retrieved with natural language, very cool, like LLMs can do that very easily, and I made it in a way that you have embed databases, so this whole context, the embeddings database is all a single file that you can, for example, upload to Blossom, and then you can do the same, create a list of the rack databases that you have there, and then suddenly you have a pluggable context and pluggable experts or domain specific content that you can plug into your into your system and benefit of that by providing real context about the domain that you want to work with your LLM.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And the awesome part about it is also, like you said before, the verifiability is baked in, like everything is self-signed, so to speak. I mean, it's pure Nostr events and again, like Blossom uploads and so on. And the result of that is that you don't ever need an API key for anything. And that's something that's it's such a killer feature from a from a developer perspective, where you can just plug all this together and you don't need to sign up anywhere and enter an API key and anything like that. I mean, we will still have to deal with spam and rate limiting and all those kind of things, but we can do that easily with Web of Trust and eCash, basically.
Everyone will have to deal with that.
Everyone will have to deal with that. And the default way is like, you know, signups and KYC and all those kind of things. And the Nostr way is basically Web of Trust and payments, like Web of Trust and sats. I mean, the original proof of work vision of, you know, like it was... it was both Hal Finney and Adam Beck had the idea basically of like, it was basically rate limiting. It was like postage stamps for emails and those kind of things. Like it was a spam prevention mechanism.
Yeah.
And we just used a difficulty adjusted spam prevention mechanism that is SATs.
Yeah. SATs and social signaling.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really cool. Like for me, like again, playing around with that, and I don't, you know, I don't see myself as a developer anymore. That the train is long gone, but I am vibing again, you know. So there's that, and it's just so cool to be able to do all that and use all that, and not have to worry about the signups and API keys and whatnot. It's like, I mean, if you ever entered the Google Developer Console and tried to, you know, create an OAuth 2 token or whatever, it's like, you know, like good 5 days are gone and it still doesn't work. And here it's basically plug and play. So that's really cool.
That is the kind of authentication hell that I was talking about with the A2A protocol and so on. Like they cannot make this protocol free and really interoperable or that really something that really worth explore, because they are gonna use fall in the same problems that they have now. That is fucking
someone,
hell.
Someone needs to say who is a legit user and who isn't.
Yeah.
And that's with the DID people as well. You know, someone has to be the certificate authority, for example, and all those kind of things. And so all these systems like massively centralized and basically turn into massively authoritarian systems, because you know there will be. I don't know, like, you know, depending on whatever, depending on the political weather, it's like, okay, the developers are from Iran or whatever. Okay, we have to deplatform all of them. Like, that's, if your IP is from this country, then, you know, like someone with a very large stick will come and will tell everyone, okay, you have to blacklist all those IPs. You have to remove all of that and so on. For, it doesn't, you know, like, and I mean, we've seen it very recently that a lot of the reasons are incredibly stupid for these kind of, you know, like measures and deplatforming and so on. And it's basically, in my opinion, it's an impossible problem. And there are no solutions to this problem in the sense that you can't, like, you either are okay with a central authoritarian authority, you know, certificate authority. It has authoritarian in its name.
Of course.
Or you have to be okay with the decentralized, messy, you know, doing it on the edges way of how Nostr is thinking about it, which means also, you know, like, it's not a perfect solution. It's like, Web of Trust is gameable. It's like, if someone has a lot of money, your rate limiting mechanism can be overwhelmed, all those kind of things. Like, I can pay to spam you and so on.
Yeah, but as we said, like, these problems are problems that everyone have to pass through.
Yeah.
And there is no golden, like,
there's no silver bullet. Yeah, exactly. There's no silver bullet.
The trade-offs for these problems are so big and so limiting that they are gonna fall in something inusable, as it right now is inusable, like all this OAuth and all these new login methods and so on. Like it's making the life of everyone much difficult.
Yeah, OAuth is a good use case as well for kind of like, it had the best intentions and I think it was just a little bit too complicated on the technical side, and it also like it centralized massively, because it's basically once Google or Facebook becomes an OAuth provider, no one else is gonna care about anything else anymore. In some sense, it was really funny how that evolved in some sense, but we'll see how it goes with I mean, there's still a long way until we can log in with Nostr everywhere, but at least it has the potential to make it work.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, one of the most exciting parts and the reason why I'm spending time and energy in this field of open source, IA and,
jump up here.
And tools and all of this.
Sorry. Whoop. Oh. Sorry.
Sorry. You know, if I'm spending all this energy and time, it's because there is a very clear path for open source in these new technologies. Like all the IA world is based on open source in the 50s, 70s.
Yeah.
All the work that have been done in that field is open source. Like all the technologies that we have, mostly almost all of them is open source, or they are open source alternatives. That was the original one.
Do you use open source models exclusively right now? Yeah. Or yeah?
Yeah.
You're a purist.
I'm a purist. I don't touch any OpenIA or Anthropic, nothing. I like to use my own models or proxies.
So what have you used so far? Mostly
models.
Yeah,
models. I use a lot of models. Like I like to experiment and to play with them locally. The ones that I can afford. But
so you haven't upgraded your hardware yet.
No.
So it's tiny llama.
Tiny llama. Like a 7 billion parameters models, things like that.
Okay,
I cannot afford much more. But
it's funny that most of the tiny ones are kind of good enough for a lot of things.
Oh yeah.
It's really
no. I think
really
I think amazing. That tiny models is also something that really excites me of this field, because they give you some capacity, some computation, but it's not like an intelligent model that cannot solve big problems for you. But definitely they can do some stuff, and also you can train them. Make them accurate for your specific use case.
Yeah, for that specific task and so on. Yeah.
And I think that there's something really interesting in tiny models, because they are gonna allow like a things appear like this protocol by Stanford that is called Minions.
I haven't heard about it yet. Minions?
Minions. Yeah.
Minions model? Is it like a?
No, it's not a model. It's a protocol itself. But was presented by Stanford like a.
Does it have anything to do with the little yellow minions? Is that the idea?
You have
a swarm of small, stupid models.
Exactly.
Okay. Great name then.
it's exactly that.
Okay.
So the protocol describes a way to have this swarm of
minions do something
minions.
Useful.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Even though every single one is super stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea basically is that you can kind of decompose a task into different minions that you can have, and these minions are going to be collaborating with a standard provider that can be a more powerful model or a proprietary model. But the key here is that the minions are going to be anonymizing the data and make it more specific, creating more specific tasks for the big model. So you are gonna be anonymizing
the data.
So
you still have a big model. You still have a generalist, so to speak. You still have a big model architect that has the overview and those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, an
orchestrator for the minions in some sense.
Yeah, like tiny models are stupid.
Absolutely.
Very
yeah.
dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
They are really good, like for a specific, very concise task.
Yeah.
So they
give me 1 second. I'm not sure if I hit record. Actually, it's like. Yeah, there we go.
Nice. It could be very dramatic.
No. It's still good. I always have a backup kind of, but it's like, I was like, you know, now that I have had half of my coffee, the brain starts firing again.
Yeah, so. I guess something to think about.
But because what is interesting that in nature you have a lot of like stupid things without a big orchestrator, and it still works and produces something smart, like an ant colony or what have you. You know, but Yeah, so that's why I was asking whether there's still a big one in some sense in charge, because I talked about this, I think with Hazard as well, but with Pablo in particular, that to me it's fascinating that we see the split between generalists and specialists, and it has to happen. Like, it has to be that way. All the cognitive scientists will tell you it has to be this way, because you cannot specialize and generalize at the same time.
Yeah.
It's in contradiction, basically.
Yeah.
And so what I think we could have also in theory, in some sense, is something like you're describing, but without a smart orchestrator model in charge, yeah, in some sense.
I mean.
Well, I'll have to look into that. That sounds fascinating.
No, it's very, very interesting project, yeah, because
it. You said Stanford?
Stanford, university. Mm. But it's very interesting because it explores different topics that we are going to need to explore, like a privacy in IA or in the, yeah, interaction with LLMs, and how to leverage like a local compute that you can afford with these tiny models,
task
for you.
So that not everything concentrates in like Facebook data centers, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the key here is that you can get your queries or your prompts anonymized.
Yeah. I see. So like SETI at home,
Yeah.
You know that from the old days, searching for extraterrestrial life at home, with like running a screensaver and stuff. Okay. So that would be minions at home, where it's just like, you have whatever compute packets that you run, and but they will run into the issue of payments.
Because
you want to sell your idle GPU or CPU or RAM or what have you.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that's what, actually in the first cohort, we talked a little bit about that with blinded compute, and I talked with Kelly about that as well, like blinded compute and zero knowledge proofs and those kind of things. That's going to be so interesting when, like, it's not an if, but it's a when, like when we get this to work.
I think that, as I was saying at the beginning, we are in this, like, the left side of this publicity curve, like at the hype.
Yeah, we're also at the left side of the bell curve.
Yeah, I hope. This is a good part. But for me, the fascinating part is that Nosser kind of fits well in all of these new paradigms.
Yeah.
Because it have some kind of answers to the problems, to the problematics that we are starting to see.
Yeah.
And for me, that is fascinating because it's kind of get it right.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's not super surprising. I mean, Nosser was built, Bitcoin was built for people, for people at the edges. It's like, what do you do? What do you use when you don't have an identity? Like, you're from Ghana and you're 14, but you have access to some compute, but you don't even, you don't have a passport, you don't have an ID, you don't even know when your birthday is, those kind of things, you know? And agents have the same problem. They are not, like, in the eyes of the state, they are not people. And so they can't KYC, you know? Like, they have all these issues and so on. And that's on the identity side. And that's why, I mean, Nosser people thought a lot, and Bitcoin people in general, they thought long and hard about identity. What do you need? What kind of identity do you actually need to authenticate yourself towards a compute system, in some sense? And it's not a passport. Like, that's, I mean, cypherpunks figured this out a long time ago. It must not be a state-sanctioned identity, because that, again, if you have a certificate authority, you run into authoritarian problems. That's just how it works. And the other part on the Nosser side, which, I mean, you know, like, Bitcoiners in particular kind of thought long and hard about, Nick Szabo in particular, is the micropayment side.
Yeah.
And the kind of, what is the difference between credit and money? And why can't you use credit, basically, for most of those things? And you always run into these limits, settlement limits with micropayments, and also cognitive decision limits and all those kind of things. And I don't know of another group of people that thought about this problem for an extended period of time and actually actively worked on solutions.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, like, it's not surprising. It's very poetic that Nosser is kind of the perfect fit, but it's also not very surprising because, again, agents, they are going to need some sort of identity, and it's not going to be state-sanctioned identity.
No, they can't
and they need some sort of payments, and it's not going to be Stripe accounts. You know, it's not going to be credit rails. Like, they can't, they just can't do it. And we already have agents that can autonomously SAP with NIP60, and we also have, I mean, you built stuff where you can pay agents and agents can pay Lightning invoices and so on. So all that stuff already works. It's just like no one knows about it. There's like three people that are in the world that are experimenting with that right now.
Yeah, and also so we have our, a little bit our early. Own problematics, you know.
Oh, sure.
About how to do things and the path and specifications and so on. But that is a different discussion.
I mean, none of that is perfect by any means. But the thing is that it is the right solution in theory, so to speak, and it also already works in practice.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I urged everyone to kind of, you know, write up a tutorial, let other people play around with it, because the stuff is further along than you would think, and no one really knows about it yet, especially on the AI side. The AI people don't really know about this stuff yet. Even in our little Nostr bubble, most people don't know that we actually have autonomous agents already that can sap things. You
know? We're fucking early, mate. And that's true, because, you know, it's going to be permissionless or hell. Like, it's not a middle ground. Like, it cannot be semi-permission and still working. You have to be totally permissionless. Like, I should be able to do anything within a local scope. I don't need a global scope for the majority of things. Like, for example, if I want to automate my house and have some NCP tools that control the lights on my house and so on. I don't want to ask permission to Google or to any.
You also don't want to send all that stuff to the cloud, you know, and API and all those kind of things.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, that's the cool thing that also the Nostr architecture and eCache as well, it's very usable in a local first environment. It's just like you can set up your home relay, you can, you know, do all those kind of things, you can set up a mint at home, like who cares, and you just, you know, you all the data stays in your house, basically. All the stuff stays in your house. You don't need an API key, you don't need the cloud for anything, and it's still super powerful stuff. So we'll see. I mean, again, like you said, none of that works. We have our own issues. working through all of that.
Yeah, we are discovering them. And definitely are going to be solutions and ways to, more clear ways to do things once we discover what is the real potential of all of this. Because now everyone is experimenting.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a very exciting technology, you know, like a technology that it doesn't fully work. It works sometimes, but it's not yet like a solid in that way.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That makes that this technology exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that more people are going to pick it up. Let's do one more ring around here and then let's go to the park or something. But I hope that more people are going to play around with DBMCP and all those kind of things and just actually publish code snippets and publish MCP tools and so on. Because it's super easy to do, actually. And we have the marketplace already. And once you have a marketplace, I think that's what I talked about this briefly, I think on Friday night or something. I think most awesome software, most great things that we have today came from the marketplace approach in some sense. And the way I mean it is like most browsers, for example, that we have that are fantastic, they were made fantastic by a community of people that was writing extensions.
Got it. Yeah.
And then the extensions got merged upstream and it just became a normal thing and those kind of things. And like we really need to tap into that, basically, into the wisdom of the crowd in some sense.
Yeah.
Games as well. Like the biggest games that we have now in the world, like computer games, they were all mods.
Yeah.
They were all game mods. Like Dota came from Warcraft 3. Basically, it was just a, you know, like Defense of the Ancients mod.
Yeah.
And Counter-Strike came from Half-Life Deathmatch, basically, and all those kind of things. And that's, you know, I can't wait to see what other people are going to build, what kind of MCP tools they are going to build, what kind of DBMs they build. Once they realize that there is this marketplace. And also, like, an important part, I think, will also be, like, you can immediately make money with it. I mean, right now, you know, it's like you're going to make 20 sets, I don't know, 21 probably. but the fact that money and identity and reputation is infused into all of that makes it so exciting. Because you can actually, it's like a permissionless app store and you can publish to it. And SAP Store shows, for example, that this is really already working.
Yeah.
And SAP Store is very, very young as well. I mean, it came out of the first cohort, basically. Yeah, so it's less than a year old.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that's why I have so high hopes for DBMCP as well and all those kind of things.
I also think, I totally agree with you. And I also think that it's such a powerful thing because, you know, all these like kind of fake sensation of control that these big companies have
about us.
It's not gonna work.
Yeah, look at the fucking viruses that are in the app stores and in the Play Store. It's like insane.
But apart of that, I think that we have this sensation of control by them because we don't have the right way to collaborate.
Yeah.
Like we was talking the other day about the whole YouTube is became a fucking hell to use to enjoy watching videos and so on because you are gonna get a rate limit or you are gonna get a.
If you use a VPN, you're not welcome anymore.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I wanted to download a video that I myself uploaded, that I myself recorded, of a talk that I myself gave, from my own YouTube account, and I couldn't. I couldn't. It wouldn't
it's
allow.
Fucking
me.
Ridiculous.
I tried for longer than I would like to admit.
Yeah.
But for me, disabling my VPN is very involved because I basically like. I have two routers, and on every router, I run a separate VPN. And so I'm not going to go into my router settings and disable all VPNs. And just so I just gave up. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm never going to upload anything to YouTube anymore.
Yeah.
But I think that's the... And we discussed this also a little bit the last couple of weeks. I hope that Nostr can provide a kind of safe haven for that as well, where it's just you have... And DVMs will play a part in that as well because you don't want to do all that manually. But basically, I have a YouTube account. I have some videos on it. I want to basically grab them and archive them on my own, on my private Blossom, for example. You know, and it's just like, I'm willing to pay for that. So if there's a DVM for that, if someone creates a DVM for that, please let me know because you'll have my sets so that I can have my videos again.
Yeah, that's what I was talking. If we found the good ways to collaborate between us and share the resources that we have, for example, the IP, the domestic IP that we have, and everyone have when
VPN
they have internet.
Service.
Kind of VPN. You are just reselling your
Blossom
your
server
IP.
As a service if you have some hard drive space left and so on. And it's like same for the GPUs and the CPUs.
Exactly. Really. Yeah. So I think that this kind of fake sensation of control that these companies have about us is because we haven't found yet the right way to collaborate. And I think that Nostr have something got something right in their approach to communication and the architecture of the network and so on, that we can find the right way to collaborate and really reduce the amount of control that these companies and these entities have over us.
Yeah, let's hope that we'll figure it out. I mean, it's about time. It's like this stuff will only get more restrictive, I think, and more crazy kind of, and it's just now everyone, I mean, it's funny how it works now, because basically all these giant companies were built up to lock everyone in. It's like giant prisons in some sense, and you're locked in this golden cage. And you're getting advertisements shoved down your throat.
It's fucking brutal.
It's fucking brutal, yeah. And that's how they made their wealth, basically. And now, it's like this switcheroo where, you know, it's still a cage. But now, at the same time that this is happening, you're used as training data, basically. And so I think this will only get worse and more political. And you know, what is the LLM allowed to say and see, and what do you train it on? And it's like we see this with the Chinese LLMs where it's like, you know, I don't know, like Tiananmen Square or whatever, whatever the usual phrases are to test these systems. And it's like, I can't tell you anything about this because it never happened. And I mean, and don't make the mistake that, you know, the glorious West, the glorious US has everything perfect and doesn't meddle with history and doesn't meddle with censorship. Yeah. It's just a different kind of, you know, manipulation and censorship and so on.
So I really think that when we reach the top of the publicity curve, that is going to happen eventually in 1 year, 2 years, you name it, I don't know. But when we start to go down, I think that the going down is going to be driven by these fundamental questions about all of this, from where the LLM get the data that
what is truth?
Used.
What is truth?
Yeah, what is truth?
That's gonna be the question.
all the intellectual property people are gonna be questioning all these things. Artists, there are gonna be a lot of questions that are gonna drive a lot of discussion, And I think that these discussions are going to slow down in some way, or at least make people realize what is the potential, or what is the real scope.
What is real is a big one.
LLMs.
Yeah.
Because I think that we are not realizing yet, because we are so excited and so hyped for these new technologies that we are not answering those questions yet. As well as we are not answering.
We're vibing into dystopia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
We are going to realize that eventually, and we are going to have to answer questions that we haven't answered yet. So I think that it's going to drive a bit the realization.
I'll have to undress. I feel the flames of hell already. Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be hard. It's. I think. With. Yeah, I mean. Give me a second. So it turns out that, you know, the founding fathers of the U.S. Oh my lord, is it still rolling? Is it bulletproof? No one knows. Oh yeah, it still works. Let's go.
Bulletproof, yeah.
I'm just glad I didn't drop it into the sea. Like it would be entirely possible as well. But the, you know, I mean, I feel like we went through all that before. Okay, without LLMs, but still, probably without LLMs. Who knows what kind of technology the Egyptians had?
Yeah,
but I mean, there's a reason why we don't dictate truth. There's a reason why everyone should be heard and everyone should be allowed to speak, and why we landed on the First Amendment, and yeah, why the logos is sacred and so on. I mean, I always repeat the same things, but it's there is a deep-seated reason, and it is exactly that reason that the world is so complex, you cannot, there is no, who should be the arbiter of truth?
Yeah.
It's sure as fuck is not going to be an LLM.
Yeah.
It's, and so you need this open permissionless world that allows anyone to speak. Otherwise, including LLMs, including agents, and including regular people, and so on. Otherwise, we have no chance of figuring out what's true. Oh, yeah. Like, no chance at all. If there's only, like, two or three models, and they determine what the truth is, or, like, there's one Skynet, and it determines what the truth is, yeah, like, we're in hell already. There's no difference. Yeah. And I feel like that's what annoys me about all the AI bros, and I listen to so many of them now. Like, I just want to puke. Like, my brain is basically throwing up constantly because I just 2x'd all the AI bro talk over the last couple months into my brain. And they just, it's very apparent to me that no one of them ever listened to any philosophers ever.
Oh, no.
And they actually figured some things out over the last couple thousand years. Oh, you know? Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. And Silicon Valley is very dismissive of all that stuff. So, yeah.
But you know, talking about philosophy, I think that is a very important topic to touch, because we kind of forget fundamental questions in our modern times. Like, I'm talking about 50 years ago or something, we didn't have the penetration that of the technology that we have nowadays in society. And we are still not answering some fundamental questions about that. And we kind of naively use everything. We never understood what it means to have instant communication between people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we still don't know.
And talking
we still
about
don't
something,
know what the internet
exactly,
is.
Exactly, exactly. Like, right. And we are talking about things that now people take as totally normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And even, you know, like something required.
I mean, you know, like, I mean, there is, it's very obvious that we are not well adapted to that. I mean, there's a reason why the suicide rate is like as high as it ever was in the history of humanity, basically. Yeah. That we have the meaning crisis. I mean, I mention Verveke all the time in conversation, but if you ever want to learn about the meaning crisis, basically, like, that's your guy. He has like a 50-part lecture on why is it that everyone feels like hopeless and meaningless, and all the people, you know, like, why do we have a math problem worldwide, basically? Why do we have...
Yeah.
A suicide epidemic and all those kind of things. I think it relates to all this stuff where, and that's one thing that the AI bros, for example, get wrong. I think we are in some sense disconnected from reality already, just by, you know, being on the screens all the time, doom scrolling all the time and so on, not really touching grass, you know, like, we do it right now.
Screen.
We're literally touching grass right now. That's why this is outside conversation. But I mean, again, like, this is not, these are not my arguments. It's all Verveke's arguments. But it's it's we lost touch with reality, and that is very, very unhealthy. And the thing about LLMs is they were never in touch with reality in the first place. And so his whole argument is like, to make them truly care about information, we would have to embody them. Because why do you care about information? It's basically...
Because I'm going to die.
Yeah, if you don't care about drinking or eating, you're going to die. So if you're really, really thirsty, your whole salience landscape and your whole being is about, I need to drink.
Yeah.
And that's the information you care about. And everything stems from there. So basically, true human-like intelligence grounds out in being itself.
Yeah.
And grounds out in embodiment and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And the AI bros completely glance over that. They're just like, yeah, well, yeah, you know.
I think that they are just more people that are assuming things as normal.
Yeah.
Like this is what I was talking about.
Also, like why do you want to spread out and conquer? Like, first of all, not every human, like a minority of humanity wants to spread out and conquer everything.
Yeah.
A minority of psychopaths, basically.
Yeah.
Most people are content, you know? It's like truly a minority of humans wants to spread through the universe and, you know, plant their seed everywhere and conquer everything.
Yeah.
And all the AI people basically make the argument that this is what AI is going to do because it wants to do, because it's the right thing to do. Yeah. And it's like most, like, why is exploration, why does it have such a high value in the first place? Because scientists are explorers, and all the AI arguments are written by researchers which are scientists. Yeah. You know, like, why go out and find out new things? What's the appeal? Like, a tree doesn't do that.
Yeah.
But we would never argue that a tree is not alive, for example. Yeah. Or also, like, a tree is very smart as well, you know? It's like,
of course.
And we wouldn't...
They have a very smart shape for the environment.
Yeah, you're adapted to the environment and so on. And it's unclear to what kind of environment the LLMs are adapted for, because, again, like, they're not really embodied in that sense. And, I mean, they're adapting right now for, you know, like, if you if you want to be, I don't know, if you want to be generous, then it's like a symbiotic relationship with humanity. If you want to be, I don't know, more... if you woke up with the doomer food in you, then it's like they're parasitic on humanity. It's like, but yeah, I don't know. Anyway, well, thanks for coming to my TED talk. The coffee is clearly working.
Yeah, it's working for me too. No, but I think that there is something very important to reflect here, because the penetration of technology, as I was saying, is something that is new, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we don't understand it yet as a society. Oh, there are experts that say, or, you know, let's call it experts.
The Amish got it right.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you.
Like, I was
the
saying...
The older I get, the more... also, visually, the more I turn myself into an Amish.
Yeah, they got it right, definitely. But I think that we are gonna have to pass through all these answers and questions. Like, we are going to have to answer a lot of the questions that we avoid to answer for more than 50 years.
Do you think we're going to make it?
I think that we are going to make it.
You're optimistic in the end?
I'm bullish on philosophy, definitely. I think that we are going to recover some fundamental questions that we avoid to answer for so many years. And that's because we are going to reach some level of consciousness about the environment that we are living in and the surroundings that we have around. And for example, I was seeing yesterday this case of, what was it called? Sarah Witt. I don't know. This woman that is against Facebook, Meta, she's revealing all these details and
didn't
documents.
Didn't she also write, or didn't she also... I think she sued Pornhub. Was that the same one?
So, I don't know. Maybe.
It rings a bell, but I'm not sure. But what did you say? Sarah White or something like that?
Sarah White.
Sarah White.
Something more. I don't remember right now. I'm very bad for names. But
anyway, I'll try to find, because there's a great book on it on the, I mean, on the Pornhub thing, but it might be something else entirely.
It was published three days ago. Okay. That was a But she in this declaration that she do, she talked about how Facebook or Meta now, they kind of leverage their ability to spy into the world, the life of people.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, for example, they treat, if you are a teenager of 13 years old, or 13 between 13 and 17, and you, for example, upload a selfie, and then you delete the selfie, they take this as a signal
of
the kind of depression.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Or bad mood.
Targeted advertisement for some mood boosters.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So, which means that the advertisement industry is going to try to make you down all the time.
Sure,
to sell you things.
Sure.
Because it's more efficient. Sure. It's more effective for them to sell you things when you are depressed.
I don't even think that this was the plan from the get-go. I don't think all these companies were founded to, hey, let's do this and let's, like, you know, make all the 14-year-old teenage girls depressed and then, you know, sell them pills and whatever. I don't think that was the plan. But once you build the system and you do this data-driven advertisement campaigns, basically, this is what works best, you know? And it's like, you don't even stand back and reflect and ask, like, why are we doing this? It's just like, okay, we have to hit the quarterly profit margins and we have to, you know, we are obliged to maximize shareholder value and all this kind of stuff. You just do all these things and it's like, okay, if we tweak this little knob here, then we'll increase our revenue by, like, 10% or whatever. And that's how it happens.
Exactly. It's just like, it's hell, man.
Like, when I was listening this woman,
we can go here.
Like, the first image that appeared in my mind was, you know, Harry Potter, the Dementors.
Yeah.
Like, these kind of spirits that suck your bad energy and fit by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was the first image that appeared in my mind yesterday when I was hitting this woman.
Yeah.
And I say, fuck. Like, how the fuck we as society, we let entities like this take us and manage our emotions and our state.
And that's the thing. That's also what most people kind of gloss over, like bringing it back to the LLMs and all those kind of things. It's a corporation like Facebook or like Google or what have you is already alien intelligence.
Yeah.
It's a non-human intelligence.
Yeah.
Like a city or a corporation or a state or what have you is already superhuman intelligence. It just is. And so we can deal with those as well in some sense, you know, like they are not necessarily destroying us all and so on. I mean, Facebook and Google a little bit, but still, but you get my point. It's like people forgot that we already have these agentic systems that are bigger than a single human, and we learn to kind of deal with them. I think we suck at it. I think we're really bad at it right now. I think we used to be better in the past because in the past, everything had a spirit. We knew how to, like, we were able to deal with this better because we knew that these things existed.
Yeah.
There is such a thing like, I don't know, the spirit of anger or the spirit of lust, and you know how to deal with it, for example. Like, it's its own entity that does things.
Yeah.
And if you're possessed by a spirit, then that's how you act and so on. And it's like, I think we see this with the Facebook engineers, for example. It's like, if you're possessed by Facebook and you're sitting in there and you use your computer science degree to optimize the click-through rate of, like, you know, like depression pills for 14-year-olds, like, you're possessed by the spirit of Facebook. Oh, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah. And you are being
well, anyway. So DVMs are going to fix that.
Not that Bitcoin and freedom technology are going to fix that. Definitely, yes.
But it is actually like another book recommendation since you mentioned Harry Potter. Most people don't know about the book, but it is a great Bitcoin book. It's Momo by Michael Ende. It's a German book, a German author, but it was translated. And it's basically, there are similar entities like the Harry Potter spirits that you mentioned that suck.
Yeah.
That's
the Dementors
that suck stuff out of you and so on.
Yeah.
And the for this book, for Momo, it's the gray man. Like, they look like gray man in suits, and they're time thieves.
Yeah.
So for me, conceptually, it's inflation.
Makes
so
sense.
It's it's basically the bankers that are inflating the currency and they are stealing your time.
Yeah.
That's what the book basically. Those are the villains of the book. And if you read the book through a Bitcoin lens, it's like fantastic. It's like everything makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a great book.
Yeah. I something that you say, like that we was more kind of conscious some time ago that we are now.
Sapping is a more conscious action than like watching the TikTok feed.
Yeah, yeah. No, but you're talking about the technology and the penetration of it in our lives.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was a kid and internet arrived to my home.
Yeah.
And my parents were so worried because I should not upload nothing.
Did the internet still make sounds, or you're quite a bit. I think you're quite a bit younger than me, but it was still like you could listen to the internet.
Yeah, I could listen the internet through the phone.
Fantastic.
But my parents were so worried because, you know, you should be careful to not upload nothing, any no personal information, no photographs.
Yeah.
And now it's like a so normalized that everyone is putting photos of their asses.
They were ahead of the curve. Is that why you are privacy conscious because of your parents?
They normally, I don't know, yeah, probably. But now they are normalizing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, as everyone.
It's completely normalized. You're a weird one. I'm always the weird one when I say, like, you know, please don't take pictures of my face, for example. It was a lot of work to not have my face on the internet, so don't ruin it in an instant, please.
I mean, that is a fucking big discussion that we're going to have to do also.
Yeah,
All the privacy implications of this new technology.
I don't think we're going to make it in that sense. I think it's just going to be normal. And now with the generative models, for example, it's just like, I mean, revenge porn has a new dimension now with generative porn. But it's not all bad, because you have plausible deniability now, where you can say there's actually a real photo or video. It's like, no, it's clearly generated.
It wasn't me.
I would never do anything with a donkey.
I didn't grow that coat. Was an LLM.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great excuse for every single bug.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, that was vibe coded.
That was vibe coded.
I promise.
I wasn't even conscious about what the LLM was writing there. Just put the LLM in jail.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm always optimistic that in the grand scheme of things, humanity will figure it out. Like, we will figure it out how to deal with all these things. But it is already very confusing, and it's going to get more confusing going forward. I still have some normie friends, and, like, my family as well. And quite, like, my mom is very normie, for example. She sends me the most insane fake stuff all the time, not realizing it's all fake, basically. And it's just like, oh, mom. Bless your soul.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
So this will just get worse and worse.
Yeah, it's gonna get worse. And I think that, as I say, like, we're gonna have to answer a lot of questions.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because it's gonna be a nightmare, you know. Like, all these new wearables, like Android DX is releasing. It's a partnership between Google and Samsung.
Yeah.
They're releasing the new Android for augmented reality.
Yeah.
And everyone is going to be wearing one of these glasses, and you're not going to be able to say nothing to them. Like, they are going to just be recording everything.
Let's see. I'm not sure. Like, the last time this was tried with Google Glass, and everyone called them the glass holes, and everyone hated it. And so it didn't really pan out the last time. But now, you know, like, now it looks like regular sunglasses, so probably there is no turning back. But, we'll see. I think one thing that you mentioned in terms of philosophical questions, kind of what is real, I think that's one of the most interesting ones, because it's so hard to answer. But also, people really crave realness. And I think, in the monetary sense, Bitcoin is the most real money, period. There is, like, it's even more real than gold in some sense. And you know, everyone that hasn't understood Bitcoin deeply will completely frown at the statement and, like, you know, like, basically, oh, what are the crazy people talking about? But it is actually true. Like, it's the most realness is, like, what is verifiable in some sense. And it is way more verifiable than gold. Because you don't know how much gold there is, and, like, you have asteroid mining, all the other things. Maybe we, you know, drill down the earth much more, and we'll just, like, quadruple our gold supply in an instant, what have you. You can't do all that with Bitcoin. And Bitcoin also, it bottoms out in physical reality. That's what's so interesting about it. It's actually, you can literally know, like, what had to happen for this Bitcoin to exist and so on. And so it's all traceable and verifiable and so on. That's what makes Bitcoin so special. In the monetary sense, Bitcoin is the realest money we ever had. And people really care about reality, and people really also care about money. And the other side of reality is, like what is authentic, you know, like the opposite of fake, basically.
Yeah.
It's
but not necessarily in the verifiability sense, but in the saying what you truly mean sense, wow. In some sense, you know,
that's like a big question.
Yeah, no, but it's because there's all these aspects to realness and what is real. And again, people really care about realness. Yeah. They really, really do.
Yeah.
And if you are in a kind of nanny environment, like if you're on a platform and you're at the edge of being deplatformed always, you don't even have a way to express yourself fully.
No.
You just don't. So you're just gonna lie for the reason of not being deplatformed. Or lie is a strong word. But but also that. But also, I mean, the COVID times showed this clearly. You know,
yeah, like
you're not gonna say what you think.
Definitely,
you're not gonna say what you think.
That's it. Like, and so, you're gonna contend yourself.
And so once we are in a situation where people are not saying what they think, how can we have any chance of finding out what's real and what's true?
That's true.
And so that's why I care so much about Noster, the free expression side, because I do really care about reality, and I really even more than that, in some sense, I care about our pathway and our tools of finding out what real is, actually. Like what is the best approach to get a grip and a handle on reality?
Yeah.
And so looping it back to, you know, closed platforms, closed systems, and closed LLMs and all those kind of things, we won't be able to figure out what's real in a closed paradigm. We just won't.
Yeah.
Because of all the things I just mentioned. It's like, you know, it's... You'll have to lie. You'll have to. You have all these chilling effects. All
you're
those kind of things.
You're gonna be constrained. You're gonna be afraid.
Exactly. You have all these constraints.
Conditionate.
Yeah. Yeah. And also long term. Like the other thing is also, if you need to box it in, the energy required to do the policing drains energy from the system. So long term, it's not even stable. That's why all authoritarian regimes basically fail, given a long enough time frame. But anyway. Thanks for coming to my second TED Talk. That was a very strong coffee, man.
That's a very good flag white,
So what's your plans the next couple of weeks and months for DVMCP?
I'm gonna keep exploring the spec. I was having, as we are here in Madeira and some, I was discussing with Hazard.
Thanks for geodoxing me. No, it's okay. Everyone knows.
I think that you mentioned this a couple of times.
Everyone knows.
But I think that I'm going to keep exploring the specification and so on, because DBN spec is something with design that worth to be revisited.
Yeah. It wasn't really designed with LLMs in mind, right? Or with this stuff in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you revise?
Because
the spec is very generic, right?
Yeah. Not just that. It's like a very bloated, because the current state of DBMs and the spec says that you have a job request per kind. So you segregate the job request per kind. So you have a kind for text summarization.
You have a kind for
image generation,
audio transcripts, what have you, and all those kind of things.
And all of them have a very different schemas for the input and the output that you expect from that.
Yeah.
So it really makes the spec really bloated. So if you want to support everything, you're going to have a great time trying to implement all of that. And I think that is a limitation.
How would you revise it? Don't listen to the semantic web people. That's my only input.
I was having a great discussion with Hazard about this, and I think that he wrote this article yesterday, I think. How DBMs are broken, basically. this came from some discussions that we have. Payments for DBMs are also a big topic, because now you have a lot of different possibilities to make payments.
Yeah.
Like with Noster Wallet Connect, or just... it's not clear how you should pay a DBM. Some of them expect that you sub the job request or some event in the middle of the process of you interacting with the DBM.
Yeah.
Other expect to just a NUT sub.
Yeah.
And it's not really clear. And the specification that tried to clarify that, I was talking also a lot with Don't Believe the Hype. And he's the most active guy working on DBMs.
He's the DBM guy.
Also dancing and very good people, really. But he was trying to clarify this, and he wrote an extension for the NIP to clarify the new parameters that DBMs have and how he's working with them. I never got merged, so it's pretty unclear how you should proceed if you want to create and work with DBMs. So I think that's worth to revisit all of this. Also, I think that we should use more the ephemeral kinds for DBMs, because right now, I'm running DBNCP.
Doesn't have to stick around forever.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I'm running for DBNCP, I'm running the website, and I'm also running a relay.
Yeah.
For the backend, let's say. I don't care in the majority of events.
Once they accomplish
their
mission. I mean it's most of the things are very simple kind of job requests, and once the job is done, you don't care about the input event anymore or what have you, those kind of things.
Also something that I'm really liking of exploring with my implementation of DBNCP is that I'm just using a single kind for everything.
Okay.
So instead of because it makes sense.
I mean, because it's all natural language prompts anyway, right? In some sense, right?
No, it's because MCP have the whole the protocol is specified. You have a method.
Yeah. Okay. Everything is an MCP tool, so it's all the same kind.
And they are using a pattern that is called reflection. So they have this method that is called list tools.
Watch out, we're getting rolled over.
So they have this method that is kind of...
you would think you're safe in the park, but no.
No.
It's like, it's basically...
You can get hit by a truck in any moment. But, MCP have this reflection pattern, which means that you have a method that is called list tools, and when you do list tools, you are going to get all the schema that you need to build your request, so you don't need a previously schema, previously shared schema,
okay,
or something like that.
I see.
You have a reflection, which means that
the schema is part of the response.
Exactly. Like you get.
So you don't need to predefine the schema.
Exactly. You get the schema of the inputs, and the output is also standardized. So you get what you need to make the request and to understand what you expect from it. So that makes that every tool can fit in the same kind, because you can understand how to input the data or how to build the request.
I see. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Because both things are very new, but DVMs predate MCP tools.
Yeah.
And so we didn't know of a way to have like a general purpose DBM that does all the things using LLMs, basically, using MCP. So
I really think that
makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
yeah, but I also think that there are a space for predefined kinds.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because you. I mean, if you want to add a watermark to an image or whatever, you know, you're not going to use an LLM. You're going to use Image Magic or like for some transcoding or whatever, like converting one file type to another one. You're going to use FFmpeg or what have you, you know, like those kind of things. It's. I mean, again, like with MCP tools, it's still, there's this layer in between where you have the natural language adapter, so to speak, for these tools, but it's not always needed. Like, I mean, I think a lot of DVMs, I mean, the main idea of DVMs was actually be like a vending machine, like something that's very, very stupid. Yeah. Take a coin, give me something.
Yeah.
And I think we, you know, regular super stupid vending machines are still extremely useful.
Yeah.
And I think we'll just have both. We'll see.
No, definitely. But something to reflect about this is that, you know, it's virtually impossible that you can come up with an integer for every job request, because job requests can be so customized and so personalized. Like how the fuck you define, I don't know, a kind for a specific job that I have.
that works. I mean, we had this problem already with ports, you know, like with the port system, where you have some numbers that are reserved, but if you build a new application, you need to come up with a new port number if it's network.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, you know, there is many integers, but that doesn't make it less messy.
Exactly. Like there are infinite integers, but there are also an infinite amount of possibilities. So.
But there's more infinite real numbers. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Because they can be negative.
Fucking set theory. Great. Oh, mathematicians are so smart. Oh, there's like 10 different kinds of infinity. The one infinity is bigger than the other infinity. Oh, well, anyways.
It's a bot.
Yeah, no, I think cleaning that up would make a lot of sense. And then I think it's just about building the tools and making it really easy for other people to create MCP tools, for example, or also making it really easy to create custom DBMs.
Yeah. I'm really glad also for the work that I'm doing in DBMCP, because I think that is the easiest way to create a DBM out of a MCP tool. That MCP is its own protocol. So if you have a MCP server, you have a DBM.
Yeah.
And you don't need to write any line of code.
Yeah,
and
by that default, makes basically.
Yeah. And that makes the library that I'm writing and the packages that I'm writing so lightweight. And so like a focus on the specific task of the communication and the receive and handling different stuff on the DBM thing. And I don't have to bloat my packages because I have to support this on the other thing.
Yeah.
No, I just support the DBMCP concept is that you have a client, an MCP client, that connects to the MCP server, and you kind of grab that into a DBM, which means that you are going to be listening to a relay and reacting to some events that can come from that relay. And you also can publish things on the relay. So it's like a DBM wrapper for MCP. And that makes it so specific, you know, so that I don't have to support any all the kinds of every use case or whatnot. Like the MCP server have its own computation and do its own thing.
Yeah.
And the package that I'm building just do the rest. That is the networking part or the handling part.
Yeah.
Of the with Nosser.
Yeah. No, awesome. I think the most powerful thing what I saw the last couple of weeks is, again, I think it has to be really easy for someone to publish their things to Nosser so it can appear in the marketplaces and the things we talked about. And what makes that so powerful is that like people can just pick it up and use it immediately if they want to.
Yeah.
And we saw this in some of the demos where just you know, coming back to some of the things that Pablo has been working on, where you know, you try to vibe code an app basically, and it fails because the agent is confused, and then someone else publishes a code snippet or a specific MCP tool, and without doing anything, the agent kind of tries again, and it fixes itself because now it has the more power, more knowledge.
I think that is so powerful.
That's so cool.
I think it's so powerful because also kind of allow everyone to expose their computational resources or assets. Like we can take the IP address that you have as an asset, you know? You are a person that use VPN, VPN facts. You cannot watch YouTube anymore, in a good way. But maybe I'm a person that I have a IP address from a ISP, and I don't care about VPN, so I can connect to YouTube, and it's not on a rate limit. So I can create a DBMCP or an MCP tool that downloads things from YouTube and put it on Blossom, for example. And I can do that with any restriction and sell that as a kind of asset.
Yeah. We saw even with one of the experiments that B actually built it from Sigurd, where you can do it for like any kind of HTTP request, which was super interesting.
Yeah.
Where it's just, you know, like I'm willing to execute your HTTP request for you using my IP, basically. Yeah. And I'll give you back the result and so on. Yeah. And I mean, I think we'll see all of that if this experiment, if this type of experimentation continues. We saw also the Atomic Swaps, for example, with the Schnorr signatures
pretty,
and so on.
That's pretty cool.
Great name. S protocol. And you could use that to again, like, execute all of that atomically.
Yeah.
Right? It's basically, at the same time, you get back the result and receive the payment.
Yeah.
And, like, I only pay you if I actually can make sure that I get the correct result and those kind of things. So, yeah, it opens up a whole new area of possibilities.
Yeah.
So it's quite simple building blocks, basically, in some sense.
That's a beautiful part, yeah.
And, I mean, well, simple. I think it's very understandable.
Yeah.
It's like once you grasp.
Approachable.
Yeah. Like, yeah. There's no hidden sauce in, like, Schnorr signatures or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you can actually look at it and understand it and so on. And again, like, coming back to the permissionless nature of it all, you can just use it and run with it and build stuff on top of it. So it's bound to happen.
Yeah. And I think that these are the building blocks that really make us closer to this level of collaboration that really make us free, because if we can collaborate at these levels,
yeah, more market-based, less silo-based,
there is nothing that can stop us. Nothing can stop me to send my IP to someone if it needed. Can also benefit from that.
Very simple things like selling your idle CPU or GPU power. Someone wants to, train models or do whatever and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Again, like, I mean, those are all very old ideas, like SETI at home, those kind of things, did all of that. Protein folding, like, had a big boost with that and so on.
Yeah.
It's all like, you actually it's not really a marketplace. It's like very, very big companies, very big institutions doing that and trying to get everyone on board. But I think once you flip it to a marketplace kind of scenario, the very interesting things are gonna happen. I think we'll have a lot of innovation, a lot of good stuff come from that. Again, like, coming back to the previous example of, like, browser extensions and so on, it's like, basically the browsers that I use, they're just, they're kind of like a compilation of extensions in some sense. It's like, if I can't install my, like, 6-7 favorite extensions, I don't even want to use the browser because it's useless to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at least gonna need an Ostra signer, in my browser.
Yeah.
If I can't install that, I can't use the browser for anything.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But I think that this is because we now kind of have the right building blocks, as you were saying, and these ideas are not new, as you were saying, but the building blocks that we have now, yes. They are new, and they have a lot of potential. Definitely,
And we have existing infrastructure to plug in.
Yeah.
Like, we have Bitcoin, we have Nostr, we have those things.
Exactly.
And you can use it. Should we cross over to the other park?
Let's go.
Do one more circle and end with a maybe not another coffee, or there will be a third TED Talk, but a nice orange juice or something.
Yeah, orange juice is nice. Ah, wow! This park is very beautiful too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it is. No, it's all very pretty, and now it's officially spring, I think, more or less.
This weather is beautiful.
Yeah, it's great. We had, like, shit weather in comparison to the last couple.
You said the end is when the weather gets better.
It was because of all the nerds. The nerds brought the bad weather.
Probably, yes.
What do you think of the last 6 weeks? What did you get out of it?
I enjoyed it so much.
I mean, you're a veteran already.
Yeah.
For me, it was very... It was the most enjoyable cohort, I think, this time around, because
I did
the least.
Yeah.
I did nothing but vibe code.
That's great. No, but I think that was super, super intense.
Yeah.
And part of the intensity was because now we have these new tools that makes everything faster and trial and error cheaper.
Yeah.
So
you can do way more with way less, in some sense.
Which means that even if the effort that you have to put into make that things, it's less, the mental effort is still the same level or more, because you have to think faster, to resolve the issues faster and so on. So that makes everything super intense.
Yeah, and you don't have one project anymore. You have like 15 vibe coded projects.
Yeah. And that is another question to answer. Yeah.
But that's the thing, coming back to your point about the philosophy becoming more important. And we touched on this in past conversations as well, but it's like, if you can't build anything, basically, the question of what to build and why becomes way more important.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's like, you can build absolutely anything. Like, let's say this stuff works perfectly, and you can vibe code anything into existence basically almost in an instant for free. What do you do? Like, why are you actually building the thing that you...
That's the question. That's the right question, I think. Because when you have a magic machine that do everything for you,
what are you gonna do?
Now you have to choose what to do. Yeah, no?
What are you gonna do with your life?
Like I said,
the Austrians, by the way, figured this out. The Austrian economist is like, I don't remember the author anymore, but time, the ultimate resource, because they figured out that, like, even if such a thing would exist hypothetically, you still have time constraints.
Yeah.
You still have to spend your time and attention on the things. And so that's basically, you know, that was the rebuttal to the Star Trek universe. What if we have free energy and replicators? Everyone has free energy. Everyone has a replicator. You still have to answer the question, what to replicate.
Yeah.
And that's a philosophical question.
Yeah.
And it relates to values and what kind of values you have and what you actually care about. And you can't automate that away. So that's kind of, that's what we will have to focus on now in some sense. I mean, you always have to focus on that, but now it's even more pronounced, I feel like.
Yeah. You know, the perfect sentence for this is a great power comes with a great responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Spider-Man.
The Uncle Ben. The legendary one.
Uncle Ben, too.
Yeah, it's still totally true. Like,
absolutely.
Like, and now you have this so powerful tools that they are crazy, man. Like, we were talking about the instant communication, that is something that we answer. But now we have this technology that is fucking crazy what you can do.
Instant Russian development team in your pocket.
Yeah, that's fucking unimaginable, you know? But now what? Now what? Now you have to answer this question of what?
What are you going to vibe code today?
Yeah, why? What, why, and when?
All right, let's maybe stay at this side. There's like a chainsaw on the other side, so let's not...
Well, I never been in this corner.
Let's maybe stay away from the chainsaw.
Step on the horse.
I thought, I was like, let's walk the parks. It's gonna be nice and quiet and so on. And like, in the one park, you get rolled over by a truck. In the second park, there's a chainsaw.
Ah, well, city sounds.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes.
but I think that we touch some interesting points and very important points. Because we are going to have to answer all of this in the next years.
Oh, absolutely.
And start to think about that could make us more prepared for all of that.
Yeah.
Because it's not something like we can avoid. We cannot avoid it. Okay,
you can't run away from this.
No, it's gonna touch your life in one way or another. And you're going to have to put yourself into the light and answer that.
Even though we like ostriches, putting your head into the sand is not going to be the best strategy going forward.
That can work for 50 years or something like that, but not forever. You know? Yeah. And now we are reaching the point of that it's critical, you know? And I think that there is... right now, the penetration of this technology is not the total penetration that we are going to see of this technology.
Just the beginning.
Like, big companies are going to be a bottleneck. And what I mean with this is that when everyone, like this technology gets really democratized and every company and every business, or as little as they are going to need this technology to operate. You know, there are not going to be enough offered to supply the demand. Because these big providers are going to be a bottleneck.
I mean, now everything is like, you know, heavily VC funded.
Oh, yeah.
VC subsidized. You see this clearly if you, like, the difference in cost, in end user cost, between using Cursor and using RuCode is massive.
Yeah.
So, I agree. I mean, I think it will also get cheaper with technological progress and so on, But
I think that the technical part is not just the only bottleneck. Like
absolutely.
The regulatory part is also big bottleneck. Like,
absolutely.
What if I'm an Iranian guy that wants to access?
We saw that already with Google, right? Like, it's a bottleneck for search. Like, again, Google defines what the truth is from the point of view of Google.
Yeah.
What are you allowed to find? What are you allowed to search for? All those kind of things.
Exactly.
And if the political climate gets weird enough, then it's just like, stuff will just fucking not show up and disappear and all those kind of things. And it was a very simple thing in terms of basically, I mean, Google is not a simple thing anymore, but as when compared to LLMs, basically like plain text search in some sense.
Yeah.
And LLMs, it's like, you know, what are the LLMs allowed to think in some sense? Yeah. You know, that's going to be the question.
Yeah.
So I agree. It is like every central force by definition is a bottleneck.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Every central thing is a bottleneck by definition. So
that's true. Yeah. That's true. And yeah. I really think that the role of us, like a people that develops our open standards and try to understand and realize what is this new technology and how that can be applied to our lives and how they can be deployed in a way that makes sense, is so important. And it's going to be so important in the future, because when you have the 80% of businesses wanting to use this technology to operate and to create their business plans or their marketing plans or campaigns or anything, or they want to outsource part of their workload into this machine, yeah. Like, it's going to be a lot of a big bottleneck, yeah. Because this, you know, yeah. Because not everyone is going to be able to access the infrastructure because there are not enough infrastructure, or because the regulatory part, yeah. And our role is going to be crucial.
Oh,
the role of open source and yeah. People are
open models, open systems, all those things are going to be very important. Yeah. I think that's one thing that the 2027 article got right. Like, they are predicting almost like an ideological arms race in some sense, I would say. I mean, they phrase it as like a technological, political one, but it's like basically whoever controls the models controls the future kind of scenario. And it's like US versus China, you know? And it's already clear now that, you know, like, US models have, I mean, that's a gross overgeneralization, but let's say US models have Western values imbued, and Chinese models have the values of the
totally
Communist
true.
Party embedded. And it's basically, if you want to, you know, move the needle in terms of the ideological stance of the world, it's like, if your model is the default model, then you can really move the needle.
Oh, yeah.
And they predicted that this is going to play out over the next couple of years. And I do agree with that. Like, I think this is already happening, and this is going to happen. And to your case, you know, like, if you have an idea for a new business or what have you, and you prompt the LLM to help you set it up and all those kind of things, like, if it's the CCP model, then it's going to be a slightly different business than if it's another model and so on. So I think all of that is already happening. So just like, I think I'm not sure what to make of all of it, you know. I'm very close to just moving to a mountain hut or to a cave or something, just touching grass forever. not touching a keyboard anymore. I mean, that's why I move away from keyboards now and just speak into microphones.
That's a step forward. Definitely.
Yeah. It's a one step away from technology. No, but in all seriousness, like, what was most fascinating to me the last couple of weeks, like, really exploring all that, the last 2-3 months now or so, is how dialogical everything with LLMs is. Like, you really enter into a dialogue with the technology itself. Like, the natural language interface is just like a constant back and forth and prompting and reading and correcting, and you are actually in a dialogue. Like, it doesn't matter if you're using Cursor or Roo or what have you, you're in a constant dialogue with your IDE, for example. And that is very strange, and it is very new in some sense. It is very, very different. And that's also what I liked about, you know, like, kind of us exploring all that together, because it was kind of a constant dialogue about all those things and all the topics you touched on as well. And kind of, I think that's the only thing we have to navigate anything is like constant dialogue and constant exploration.
And I think that also worth to explore the overlap between, you know, the natural language that we use right now to communicate and the natural language that we use to prompt. There is a big overlap between these two topics. And I think that we were talking about that the other day, but I noticed that by prompting LLMs and being very clear and concise.
Oh, it helps you think in some sense.
And to put my ideas in order in the way that makes sense for an external system that is kind of neutral, It kind of helped me to formulate things in order to express it to other people and so on, to
Several
people.
Yeah.
And that is something very interesting to explore, like the overlap between the natural language interface.
Yeah.
Definitely we are into something here, because the natural language interface is something that's gonna prevail in the time.
Oh yeah.
It's gonna be like the same that from touch keyboards to to physical keyboards to touch screens.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna be the same. Yeah. Like you had at the beginning one interface with physical keys that you have to. Like I prefer that, to be honest, but. Then we have the touch screens that are more intuitive,
it's a
massive
evolution in terms of interfaces. It's also, I like what, I don't remember now who said it. Maybe it was Hazard. The next evolutionary step in terms of how we went from, you know, like assembly to higher level languages, and now we're going like higher level languages like C. and now we're going from high level languages to natural language, which is natural language and natural concepts basically, which is of course a layer above, and then it gets translated to, you know, like TypeScript most likely. Some form of JavaScript. Like if you don't define the language, it will just default to JavaScript. It's really funny. It's just like, okay, everything I read, like 90% of the code I read is JavaScript, so I'm just gonna use JavaScript. Humans really like JavaScript. That's basically what they're thinking. Oh my god, I hate JavaScript.
JavaScript was made for humans.
Anyway, now that I don't have to write or read it anymore, I can just vibe it. I like JavaScript now. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
I mean, We should change our natural language and use speaking HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be a much better structured language.
That would work. That would work perfectly well.
Smart cut.
Let's see. What do you say? Juice. I'm pretty cooked.
Yeah.
All right. Any final words? Last words. Any last words before Skynet takes over and we're all gonna die? We're all gonna make it. That's fantastic. Those are great final words. Let's see if we're still recording. Oh yeah, we're lucky.
Nice.